You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for nearly the last 10 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben Folks, kind of a wild weekend, or a weekend chock full of MMA action, I guess you could say, with the UFC doing its normal fight night on Saturday night. You had Bellator pulling off an event, and you also had Eagle FC with its second stateside event down there from Florida, I believe. How did you handle all this, man? How did your MMA fighting schedule end up working out over the weekend?
You know, not that great.
Oh, okay.
I'll tell you that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did you hit some snags?
Let's just say I was playing a lot of catch up. Wasn't able to follow along live with everything I necessarily wanted to. Had a sick child at home for pretty much most of the weekend, and you know, that took a lot of the attention focus away, but I was able to tune in to the UFC fight night just in time for Khalil Roundtree Jr. to break a man's face and then break all our damn hearts.
Yeah, not often that happens. It's usually one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But Khalil Roundtree is out here hitting a double, the two bagger.
Sure.
Two birds with one stone.
That's one way to put it. I also, though, speaking of broken hearts, you know, I was the one saying if we all end up sad after Diego Sanchez and Kevin Lee fight for the Eagle weight title over at Eagle FC, then we only have ourselves to blame. And it didn't happen that way.
No. Yeah, Diego Sanchez came out there. I mean, I'm not going to say he was looking like the Diego Sanchez of old. I'm not going to say that he was looking great. But he certainly exceeded my expectations in terms of how he was just going to look blow by blow in the fight. I thought that, better than I expected, which was fine. Don't want to give away too much about it. We might be talking about it later in the show, but, the sadness didn't get brought in by Diego Sanchez over the weekend.
Just feels like one of those weekends where maybe we dodged a sadness bullet.
Or did we just postpone it?
Well, okay. That's another way to put it.
Reminder, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. Don't forget to go out and follow us on Instagram at CME if you nasty, and like us on Facebook at facebook.com/co-main event. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines or podcast libraries. And if you think we're having fun right now, you absolutely need to check out what's happening over at patreon.com/co-main event. Ben Folks and I are party rocking over there with three additional podcasts every single week. Just $1 will get you in the door for the Wednesday live chat over there on the Patreon page. A $5 contribution will get you in the door for the live chat and Friday's Power Hour. And if you are a big swinger, one of the capital G girls or guys of the co-main event, one of the beloved patrons of the Co-Main Event Podcast, a $10 donation will get you in the door for all three podcasts, the Wednesday live chat, Thursday's Doing the Damn Thing, and Friday's Power Hour. We do have fun. People seem to enjoy it. Check us out over there, patreon.com/co-main event. Again, just $1, damn dollar a month gets you there for the live chat. And from there, who knows what you might decide to do.
It's like 25 cents a week. I mean, you lose that and the couch cushions, I'd say. And you know, the thing about the CME Patreon, Chad, it's entirely user funded, which means you gotta give.
That's right. You gotta give.
A lot of people give.
We got music this week from old school CME fan Kyle Kelly Yonner, who also happens to be a pretty rad drummer. He's got a solo project out. It's an EP of instrumental tracks, mostly drums and synths. I think it's pretty cool. If you like what you hear from him on the show, you can check out the rest of the EP at his website, kyleky.com, or follow him at kylekydrums on Instagram. Ben got an email from Kyle Kelly Yonner this week. He's coming to Montana this summer. He's going to be on tour with a band, and late June, they're going to be trekking across a treasure state. So Maybe we'll get to meet him in the flesh. You never know.
Oh, nice. Where are they playing in Missoula?
They're not playing here, but they're driving through
what
on
the
their
hell?
Way between Spokane and Minneapolis, I believe. So they got a few free days here in
First
the state
of
Montana.
That feels like a betrayal that I will never forgive. That they're going to pass through. They're not even going to stop, play a quick set down at the Union Hall, something like that. Come on. You can't just set up the drums. Just set up the drums downtown by the X's, man. Just hammer it out of a summer evening.
Maybe
Why
you
not?
you can hook them up with your copious nightlife connections.
Okay. I'll do that.
We got three rounds, as usual, this week in the Co-Main Event Podcast. In round number one, Saturday's UFC Fight Night event produced a lot of entertaining moments. Unfortunately, the main event wasn't really one of them. And in round number two, elsewhere, an injured Kevin Lee eked one out over Diego Sanchez. And maybe getting in the Adam Borich business wasn't such a bad idea for Bellator. And in round number three, the UFC heads overseas for the first time in a minute. Are we really going to pull this thing off over there in London? All that, plus are you fucking kidding me and just saying stuff. But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
This week's listener mail is once again brought to you by NordVPN. NordVPN is, as you guys know by now, the fastest damn VPN in the world. Ben, we've both been playing around with NordVPN the last several weeks. I still have no complaints. It's still kicking major ass over here on my end of things, keeping me safe while I'm out here exploring the darkest corners of the internet and all other times. You know, if I'm out and about, and I'm on an unsecured Wi-Fi network, NordVPN, right there on my phone. I believe you can hook it up to 6 devices if you get the NordVPN deal, and it protects me from hackers and gives me peace of mind while I'm out and about. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/comain or use the code COMAIN to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus one additional month for free. And a bonus gift, it's completely risk-free with NordVPN's 30-day money-back guarantee. Ben, I'm going to put you on the spot. What's your favorite part of having NordVPN over there on all your shit?
Well, you touched on it. I like having it on my phone, and it just kicks in right away when I sign into a new Wi-Fi network. And, you know, I mean, whether I'm out at the Jiffy Lube using their suspect Wi-Fi, whether I'm out there, one of these here sports bars, taking in a ball game, I like the peace of mind that comes with knowing that I have protection from the VPN that CNET called an encryption powerhouse with the biggest VPN bang for your buck.
That's facts. Yeah. First piece of listener mail this week comes to us from our guy Pissed Off Lawyer over on Twitter. You know, we've mentioned this before, but for a guy whose handle is at Pissed Off Lawyer, it's actually pretty nice.
Yeah, it seems like really pretty reasonable, and I keep waiting for him to just blow his stack. So yeah. It hasn't really happened.
No, not yet. He writes, has there ever been a meteoric rise followed by such a rapid fall in UFC history that is even comparable to Marlon Moraes? So Marlon Moraes, of course, goes out there this weekend, Ben, gets KO'd by Song Yadong in the first round, 2 minutes and 6 seconds. Marlon Moraes at 33 years old is starting to show his age and then some, if you ask me. He has now lost 4 fights in a row in the UFC, just 1-5 in his last 6 fights. And of course, that victory is the split decision over Jose Aldo at UFC 245, where the UFC and a lot of other people just decided to count it as a win for Aldo. Regardless of how the judges actually saw it. That is a stark contrast to his previous 4 UFC fights, which were all wins. Started off with a split decision loss to Rafael Assuncao and then went on a tear during 2017 to 2019. Several performance of the night bonuses also in there for Marlon Moraes. What do you make of this sudden, just precipitous decline for the Magic Man?
Yeah, I mean, like you said, that win streak included a knockout of current champ Aljamain Sterling. You know, he was fighting tough guys there, especially because when he came over as the WSOF champ, he had a little bit of a head of steam. People were paying attention. And so he got thrown right into the mix against tough fighters in the UFC. And even his, that loss he had in the title fight to Henry Cejudo, I mean, he was looking good early on in that fight. And then Triple C, Henry Cejudo, arguably one of the greatest combat sports athletes of all time, found a way to get back in that fight. But he's going up against the best in the world at that weight. And win or lose, was really looking like he belonged there. And it just seemed like, I don't know how much of it is age and how much of it is the mileage catching up on you a little bit, but it seems like suddenly he can't take a shot the way he used to. You know, he had that bad knockout loss to Corey Sandhagen, and then it's just been one after another, and it seems like it takes less and less to put him down these days. And that's the troubling thing, because we haven't seen too many people where that seems to bounce back. Yeah. Once that starts happening to you, you know? And he's in this division where it's already tends to be a young man's division. And it already has so many good, talented fighters in it that you can't fall off even a little bit and stick around there the way you can at some of the higher weight classes. And I saw people making this point, I can't remember who it was, on Twitter, just by posting like several different people who have gone down this similar road, especially at bantamweight, whether it's like Cody Garbrandt, you know, now you see it happening to Marlon Moraes, you see it happen to a couple other people there, and it's just like, man, you slip just a little bit and it's like a fall all the way to the deep dark bottom of the division.
Yeah. I saw somebody online, I can't remember if it was on Twitter or over on the Co-Main Event Podcast message board, another thing you get access to, by the way, if you join the Patreon, talking about how they can already see Marlon Moraes over in ONE Championship getting knocked out by John Lineker, which that's sad, but also, I don't know, man, sounds kind of right to me as for the future of Marlon Moraes. You said it's a young man's game there at bantamweight. I want to do this question from Shaka the Cerulean, who wrote us this week. He writes, are we going to let Song Yadong break Dominic Cruz next too? Because as a plot twist under his direction, Mr. Faber in his corner can basically point his new wind-up toy with fast hands on seek and destroy missions toward every UFC vet that stood in his way. I do want to talk about the possibility of Song Yadong versus Dominic Cruz, because, of course, Yadong got on the mic and called out Dominic Cruz after this win. But let's just talk about the 24-year-old Song Yadong for a minute here. I said you mentioned that it is a young man's game, and this guy seems to have it, you know, everything that he needs to be successful over there. Currently on now a 3-fight win streak, and Marlon Moraes, the biggest name opponent that he has defeated. Song Yadong was the betting favorite coming into this fight. He scoops up a performance of the night bonus here with this knockout of Marlon Moraes, as well he should. I think well deserved. This is one of those fights where after I saw it, I kind of felt like, okay, I think matchmakers might have kind of known what they were doing here. Given Song Yadong this co-main event spot against Marlon Moraes, you know, maybe you see the names on the poster and you think it's maybe an even matchup. Then you start looking a little further into the betting lines and everything else. You realize Song Yadong is the obvious favorite here. And then he does exactly what the sharps expected him to do. This one plays out according to chalk. He gets the KO and it comes off smelling like a big old feature attraction showcase spot for the 24-year-old up and coming, perhaps, future star. Did you see that one this way after it was all said and done, that maybe we were trying to put Song Yadong into a high profile spot where he'd get a nice win for himself here?
I guess so. I mean, I guess the matchmakers did seem to know what they were gunning for here and got it. I just thought it would be more competitive. I thought Marlon Moraes would be able to make it more competitive, but he took that shot and went down hard, and Song Yadong knew it too. He knew when he connected that was a walk-off homer. And there's something about, though, Uriah Faber. He's got this young guy, you know, tearing his way up the ranks. And then he could stand back there like a pro wrestling manager and point out his various enemies who are still in the game and be like, get that guy next. What do you make about that? Do you feel good seeing him kind of aim Song Yadong like a goddamn cruise missile right at his former rivals who are still hanging around while Uriah Faber himself is pretty much out of the game?
Not totally. I don't totally love it, to be perfectly honest with you. Maybe just because I kind of like Dominic Cruz. I think he's a nice guy. He's a smart guy. I've interviewed him a couple times, and he has always been an easy person to work with. I enjoy his stuff on TV with the UFC. I don't relish the thought of any, you know, young up-and-coming guy knocking out one of my veteran favorites, men of a certain age, let's just say, yeah. my peers, so to speak, at least in terms of age. And this one, I don't know, feels kind of mean-spirited, right? Like, oh, here's this Dominic Cruz. We don't like him over at Team Alpha Male. Now we got this new hotshot bantamweight contender. Let's, as the emailer here says, wind him up and turn him loose on Dominic Cruz for no other reason than maybe just for fun. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you think there's a sign up in the locker room at Team Alpha Male? Like, just some quick reminders, no shoes on the mats, put on some sandals if you're going to get off the mats and you got to go into the bathroom. If you find yourself with a winning streak at bantamweight, call out Dominic Cruz.
Yeah.
Just,
I mean, they got a picture of him up behind the desk like he's been passing bad checks, right? Don't take any paper from this man. Also call him out if you get the chance.
Yeah.
Next question this week comes to us from our guy, Devin Scott. He writes, so Khalil Roundtree Jr. went out and not only won his bout against Carl Roberson, but he also demonstrated hashtag, I don't give a fuck about your internal organs. Khalil Roundtree Jr. fights like you owe him money and will hurt you, which is also evident by the oblique kick TKO from his last fight. Not sure what the question is here, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on this tough ass SOB. Side note, I'd like to use this bout as case number 4,829, why I'm not in the game of professional punchy face. This was pretty breathtaking here when Khalil Roundtree Jr. hurt Carl Roberson, kind of just like he felt like turning it on, it seemed like, got him down. I like when Khalil Roundtree calmly gets up and kicks guys in their ribs when they are down on all fours. That's just nasty. Here's the thing that I think about Khalil Roundtree. He is one of these dudes. He's been in the UFC since 2016. He's been a little up and down. He has struggled at times maybe to find what feels like his perfect weight class. He struggled sometimes to really show out against name opponents. He just seems like he's been a little inconsistent. But he also seems like the kind of guy, just 32 years old still, by the way, who, if he was able to find a rhythm or, you know, really put it all together, that it kind of feels like the sky is the limit for him, just in terms of the tools that he brings to the table. I know stylistically, he's obviously a much different fighter than somebody like Charles Oliveira, but he reminds me as like one of these guys who's been around in the UFC for a long time, like Oliveira was at one time, where maybe we discount them because we're like, oh, we've seen this guy. We've seen the best he has to offer. But then, and obviously this can't happen for everybody, but these guys, they start to get more comfortable. They start to put it together. They start to get more experience. And all of a sudden, boom, you got this brand new guy. Khalil Roundtree strikes me as a guy who could be that. Just because obviously he brings this physicality and finishing ability and kind of like certainly not mean spiritedness, but just like the cutthroat nature of being able to put someone out when you got him in trouble. And if he can continue to do that consistently, I think he's kind of like must see TV, to be perfectly frank.
Yeah. I mean, when I watched this finish here, it brought to mind the old school shooter box and pride days, like Wanderlei Silva and Shogun Hua just going out there and not even thinking about what you might do to them, instead just thinking about how quickly they can stomp a hole in your body. And it was just violent. And it really, it takes a lot to shock people in this sport, people who regularly watch this kind of violence, and we just get used to so much. And when you see even hardened observers of MMA coming away from your TKO finish like, damn, that guy really wanted to hurt that dude. That you really did something there.
Yeah.
It takes a lot. And yeah, I mean, I think you're right that we have to some extent done the thing where we say, we've seen enough of you now to tell ourselves that we know all, we've got the book on you. Mm-hmm. And we've talked before about how that is often wrong and that we have to allow for the possibility of growth and change and development as the years go by. Especially for somebody where I think this is like his 15th or 16th pro fight, if you don't count the Ultimate Fighter stuff. So, you know, still some room to grow and to change as a fighter there. I also wonder, though, he seems like he's in a tough spot to be, like, size-wise in that division. To be like a 6'1" light heavyweight, I think it sometimes be tough. Like, you know, if there were a cruiserweight division, if we had like a 195 or something like that that you get down to, like maybe that would be where he'd fit in. Because I feel like, you know, consistency, like you said, has been an issue. But also you get up against some of those bigger guys in the light heavyweight division. I wonder if he'll still be able to bring some of this to bear the same way.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. It is certainly a new day at light heavyweight. It feels a little bit like everybody has renewed life there now that John Jones has at least allegedly moved on to a full-time career at heavyweight. And in fairness, I guess he's out there against Roberson, a guy who had fought at middleweight mostly in his UFC career, though he had had a light heavyweight appearance or two. Roberson certainly didn't look small out there, but maybe there was a strength issue that you could feel in the cage. Just a guy coming up from a different weight class. But I don't know. You start to consider guys like Thiago Santos, obviously, and Magomed Ankalaev, who we'll talk about coming up in round number one. You know, the champion Glover Teixeira, Yuri Prochazka is out there. It's not like the light heavyweight division of old, where you had to measure yourself against this insurmountable mountain in John Jones. Like, I don't know, I would watch Khalil Roundtree fight any of those guys, to be perfectly honest, and I don't know if he would be physically outmatched against any of them. I guess we would have to wait and see, but he's got to put a couple fights together is the bottom line for me about Khalil Roundtree, just because he's been kind of, you know, win one, lose one, win two, lose two, something like that throughout his entire career. But I like what he's doing here, and as you mentioned at the top, guy gets on the mic and gives a heartfelt and emotional speech about being a 300-pound child teenager on the verge of suicide and how he wants to help all of the people that he can, you know, find their path in life so they feel like they have something to live for, compared to what we get most often from these post-fight in-cage interviews. And frankly, the way a lot of people in MMA act all the time, give me Khalil Roundtree Jr. 1,000 times every day. I have no complaints about anything that I saw from him this weekend.
Yeah.
All right. Next question this week comes to us from Mr. Biscuit.
Okay.
Who writes, someone has to tell Terrence McKinney it's okay to take a chill pill. Man was fighting like he left the oven on and paid the price against a veteran like Drew Dober, who has the jawline of a chipmunk with a toothache.
Mr. Biscuit holding nothing back.
I like that description of Drew Dober, but I don't totally know that I understand it. He goes on to write, despite this blip, do you think he, meaning T-Rex, is a legit newcomer in the shark tank that is 155? You know, I don't necessarily know that I need Terrence McKinney to chill. Like, I was thinking as I watched this fight, you know, right up to the point where Drew Dober turned things around and beat him, Terrence McKinney is a guy who's rapidly becoming, like Khalil Roundtree, must-see TV in this division, and that's hard to do at 155 pounds where you have so many guys. He let me count them up here. He had 5 consecutive first-round stoppage victories heading into this fight against Drew Dober. Some of those were in LFA and elsewhere before he made it to the UFC, but his first two UFC wins were both first round stoppages, a 7-second knockout and a 2-minute and 11-second submission. So a guy who goes out there and wastes little time. And he certainly started that way against Drew Dober on somewhat short notice here on Saturday night. And maybe it would be good for him for his professional prospects if he takes a bit of a chill pill. But just as a viewer at home, I was like, man, I need to mark my calendar when Terrence McKinney's going to fight, because even in what is considered the most competitive shark tank division in the entire sport, if you're going to do that, I'm going to watch.
Yeah. And in fairness, he kind of almost had Drew Dober.
He did. Yeah.
He had him badly hurt in that first round. And really, it's a testament to Dober's veteran savvy, and not to mention just, insane toughness that he was able to take those shots and stay as calm as he did. That's the really impressive part to me, is you did not see him freak out even when he was in a bad situation right away. I mean, it's easy afterwards to come along and be like, hey, Terrence McKinney, this thing that you were doing that was working out extremely well and that almost continued to work out extremely well, you just did a little bit too much of it and you should stop it now because we don't think it worked. But it's like, I mean, he gave himself a chance to win that fight. Drew Dober's a tough guy, found a way back in it. That can just happen to you. I don't know if it's necessarily, like, I mean, obviously, he's still a young fighter and does not have a ton of experience, so I'm sure he'll learn from some of that. But it also just seems like if you're going to fight that way, and it's an exciting way to fight, we like it when it works out, that's also a possibility that it can turn around on you if you're not careful. But I also think that could be the kind of experience that he learns from. And the trick is not losing all the fun stuff, the stuff that made you good and dangerous and exciting, but also making some adjustments as you go to allow for new things you are learning about how this shit works.
We're going to squeeze in a couple more here. This one from Brandon Boyd, who writes, it's 2:30 a.m., and he's tweeting a spinning kick, head kick KO from Brawl Night 18. It's 5:30 a.m., and we get a reminder that Knucklefest 33 is starting. It seems every time you refresh your Twitter feed, there's a GIF or fight reminder from Grabaka Hitman. What are your thoughts on this mystery man and how much he has helped us from just being filthy casuals? You got to respect the big homie, the Grabaka Hitman, who does appear to be online 24 hours a day, undertaking the gargantuan, almost inhuman task of tracking international MMA wherever and whenever it happens to be going down. And almost to the point where maybe there's a conspiracy at foot. Maybe the Grabaka Hitman is a team, a family of people out there. Because this is like, I don't know when this guy sleeps, to be perfectly honest. I don't know.
It is hard to see how one person could do it all. And yet, the tone of Grabaka Hitman tweets is always so consistent.
Yeah.
Don't you think that mask would slip if it were more than one person?
It's true. It's two brothers, twins.
Okay.
Who are, psychically linked.
Honestly, I have a hard time even believing that two people could do it. Let's say triplets.
Yeah, triplets, three bodies that share one consciousness.
And one laptop.
You know,
they sleep in shifts, while another one keeps an eye on global MMA and brings all the best and weirdest and funniest moments to us so that we don't have to be constantly paying attention to everything going on in the nonstop world of this sport.
One time I tried to interview the Grabaka Hitman back when we worked for The Athletic, and he demurred. He was like, I enjoy the anonymity. You know, he was super nice about it, but he was like, I don't... You know, I'm not interested really in having my real name and stuff out there. So a mystery is right. It's a mysterious circumstance over there.
When you were trying to interview him, did he ever slip up and be like, no, we don't really know if that's best for us? For me, I mean.
It sounds interesting. Let me ask my two brothers who I'm psychically linked with. Oh, whoops. I don't know.
See, that seemed like the psychic link would mean that you wouldn't have to ask them. They would just know.
I assume everybody who's listening to this already follows the Grabaka Hitman, but if you are not somehow and you are interested in seeing all the knockouts from all around the world at all times, you got to give the man a follow.
Yeah.
All right. You weren't going to let me get out of here without this one, were you?
Listen, people are going to put gold in our inbox. We need to share it with the listeners.
The last piece of listener mail this week comes to us from Creamy Steve. Subject line, creamiest fights. And he writes, what do you fellas think is the creamiest fight coming up? With a surefire, creamy ending full of hot, steamy cream.
What the fuck? It's just like, it's already, he starts off being Creamy Steve.
Yep.
Asking about the creamiest fights. And then it's, you know, and I'm like, okay, maybe there's a way that we could think that we're, that this is a term the youth are using or something. But then when he finishes with hot, steamy cream, whatever, nope, I can't hold it together anymore at that point, man.
You know what I admire the most about Creamy Steve is his commitment to the form.
Yeah. I just like to imagine him out there, like, at a dinner party being introduced as Creamy Steve. And then, you know, just having conversations with people and him being like, so you got any creamy plans for this weekend? What's the creamiest hiking spot you've been to around here?
The creamiest fight coming up is definitely Ilir Latifi versus Alexi Olenek. That's the creamiest fight.
How did you
fight.
Arrive at that?
I just picked it at random. Picked it at random off an upcoming UFC fight card.
What would you say makes it so creamy, Chad?
Well, I mean, if you're going to ask me what do you fellas think is the creamiest fight coming up with a surefire creamy ending full of hot, steamy cream, that's just the first one that comes to mind.
Okay. I'm going to say Khamzat Chimaev and Gilbert Burns.
That is incredibly creamy. You're right about
creamy
that.
Creamy AF.
Good call. Good call, Creamy Ben. That's going to do it for this week's listener mail. If you have a question, a comment, or concern that you would like to air to the podcast, you know how to do it. Go to the website, comainevent.com. Click the link in the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. Right now, though, we're going to go ahead and get started with round number one. Well, Ben, it looked like a banger on paper. Magomed Ankalaev and Thiago Santos out there in an important light heavyweight contender fight in the main event of this UFC Fight Night event Saturday night from the Apex down there in Las Vegas. Instead, what we get is a rather tepid 5-round decision win for Ankalaev. Important for him, I think, in a number of ways, but not the fight that we expected.
No. And frankly, it felt like there was always a little more he could have done here. And I mean, I realize that's unfair, and we've done it to many people over the years in MMA where we see somebody who looks like they are in total control of the fight. They look like they can sort of cruise to a victory. There's a bunch of incentives in this sport that tell you that don't fuck around and lose a fight that you have in hand. You get twice as much money for winning. Nobody's going to give you the tough guy points if you go out there and you screw it up and you get yourself knocked out. And he did get rocked by Thiago Santos at one point here and came close to having the whole thing turned around on him. But it also seemed like if he would just turn it up a little bit, maybe he could have gotten this one out over with, and instead was content to just sort of pick away. And, you know, a smart game plan, if you can do it, especially once Thiago Santos reminds you that he can hit pretty hard, but not exactly a super memorable fight.
Yeah. And, you know, sometimes we get these when you have two normally aggressive, really powerful finishers in a big spot where no one wants to lose. I think this can kind of happen. Obviously, we had expectations for this one to be a little bit more violent and a little bit more exciting than it turned out to be. But sometimes these guys cancel each other out, man, with their skills. You know, I can see being up against either one of these guys and thinking you don't want to open up too much, because as Ankalaev found out, if Santos tags you with a good one, he can hurt you. And I think that the other thing is true as well. Clearly, we would have liked to see Magomed Ankalaev go out there and do something a little bit more impressive. By the same token, though, this is his eighth win in a row. And, you know, he's really setting himself up as a contender in this, as I mentioned, newly wide open light heavyweight division. I also think that, you know, it's good to see the guy go out there and, like, put together a consistent 25-minute performance. This is his first 5-round fight in the UFC, first 5-round fight to go the distance. He didn't really slow down, really didn't seem to get tired. He seemed to be there in the 5th round in much the same condition that he was in the first, which I think is good to see from a guy who's now verging on contender status, a guy who's going to be in more 5-round fights as he moves forward. But overall, I guess in the grand scheme of things, especially if you wanted to turn some heads and feel like you were in line for the winner of this Prochazka Glover Teixeira title fight, it would have been nice to see a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that is the thing. You mentioned light heavyweight feeling like it's wide open right now. And there is a sense that the pecking order is a little bit more fluid than it has been in recent years. And so this is the time to put your hand up, make a case for yourself. This does not seem like it really is the fight that does that for him. I mean, obviously, it is a truth divinely writ on the official ledger of the co-main event podcast. Always better to win a fight than to lose. And so that's the important thing that he got done here. But with the pace of events the way it is right now, in 2-3 weeks, who's going to be thinking about Magomed Ankalaev after this one?
Yeah, that's a good question. Here are the guys who are in front of him. He was ranked number 6. He just beat number 5 in Thiago Santos. In front of those two are Anthony Smith, Alexander Rakic, Jiří Procházka, and Jan Blachowicz, and of course the champion, Glover Teixeira. You know, I could see him fighting any one of those guys, really. So I don't think he has to worry about losing his spot too much. I don't know that he's going to be in the forefront of any of our imaginations after a fairly uninspired performance like this. But at the same time, in this division where it seems like everybody now has an opportunity to perhaps be the champion, and there's not a ton of depth here. It's not like this is the lightweight division where a bunch of guys are going to leapfrog you. I think he can probably get away with a performance like this. But as he continues to climb the ladder, if he does get an Anthony Smith or somebody like that in his next fight, he'll probably be looking to do a little bit more damage, I would think. But all in all, a solid victory for the 29-year-old. And another one of these guys who makes you wonder, if we fast forward a year or two, are we just going to have a handful of Russian champions at the top in the UFC in a number of different weight classes?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you got a Magomed showing up in here being pretty good at fighting. We've seen that before. We know what to make of that.
It's not totally astonishing anymore, is it?
No, it is not.
On the other side of the coin, Thiago Santos, now 38 years old. He's expecting a child with Yana Kunitskaya, his wife. He is now 1-4 in his last fights, the last 5 fights. The winner is, the victory is Johnny Walker in October of 2021. You might have some cause for concern here, I guess, if you're a Thiago Santos supporter or you're Thiago Santos himself. He's still got the goods, man. He still goes out there, looks very dangerous, explosive, very powerful in his approach, but at the same time, just not getting the results right now.
Well, it seems like maybe he's just become a little bit too predictable by opponents who can do a few different things, and they know what to expect from him, and they can kind of put him on the back foot and know that as long as you keep moving and you don't stand there and catch one upside the head, which, you know, in fairness, Magomed Ankalaev did, however briefly here, that you can deal with this guy. And it seems like his own style seems less aggressive now than it used to be, and so you're dependent on people sort of walking in right where you want them. And especially as you get higher up in the division, people aren't going to do that. I also wonder, as you see where Thiago Santos is now in his career, you see him in this fight where he's able to land one and drop Magomed Ankalaev, but wasn't able to finish it off. Are you ready yet to invoke the Toby Keith rule on Thiago Santos? Is he not as good as he once was, but as good once as he ever was?
I mean, like I said, physically, it seems like he's got it. Like it does. You don't look at him and think this guy's shot. But at the same time, maybe people are starting to figure him out a little bit because the results, as I said, just haven't really been there. I don't know. Far be it from me to either agree or disagree with the great troubadour, Toby Keith.
Yeah, it's just like a truth just lifted out of our own hearts, you know?
Let's go ahead and do Are You Fucking Kidding Me, which seems appropriate considering that talk of Toby Keith. Yeah. And then we'll move on to round number two. Ben, did you see Sean Strickland?
Oh, man. This is my Are You Fucking Kidding Me
as well. Oh, we got a joint.
Do we have ourselves a joint Are You Fucking Kidding Me?
Are You Fucking Kidding Me? I guess not surprising that you would have this reaction from Sean Strickland about Khalil Roundtree Jr. and his vulnerability in the cage and at the press conference on Saturday night. I'm not going to read the tweet because the tweet is foul. But let's just say Sean Strickland is not behind the idea of Khalil Roundtree showing these emotions. My favorite part is that later Strickland jumps on and makes a couple of videos to further explain himself. And what he says is, wait, wait, you guys don't understand. Like, we have trained together in the past. You think you would like Khalil Roundtree Jr., but if you got to know him, you wouldn't. Because, and this in his exact words, he is a PC beta. I can't remember the word, the description that he used. But basically that Khalil Roundtree is a PC beta male, I guess. To which I say, I guess if that is the worst thing Sean Strickland can say about you, like, I don't know, it's kind of, you're just kind of making Khalil Roundtree Jr. sound cooler to me as you go on. Like, his indictment of Khalil Roundtree Jr. seems to be he's too nice. He's a good dude.
He also in this original tweet that he posted about it before he felt the need to double down with video explanations, he says at the end of it, seriously, being in the same room as him makes me cringe. Now, I don't know if a lot of people feel like being in the same room with Sean Strickland is a really great, positive, uplifting experience. You know, I think that there's whenever we form or add to our existing opinions about Sean Strickland with takes like this one, for example, I don't come away thinking, now that sounds like a guy I'd love to just hang out with.
Yeah, plus just we've seen his house.
Yeah, just seems like a guy who'd be a lot of fun and just a very calm hang with Sean Strickland. Just chilling at Sean Strickland's place, lifting up the chain, flush the toilet, whatnot, asking if I can borrow the mail gun to go check the mail. I don't get the sense that Sean Strickland is a person that a lot of us would necessarily want to be in a room with. So when he's like, oh, I can't stand to be in the same room as this guy, it's like, so then maybe he's okay?
Now,
is that what you're trying to tell me?
Here is what I would make as an addendum to all of this. So Sean Strickland, outside the cage, acts like a crazy psychopath.
Mm-hmm. Kind of his thing.
Then when he gets in the cage, doesn't do a whole lot.
I see where you're going.
Khalil Roundtree Jr., we are led to believe, acts like a decent human being outside the cage. And when he gets in the cage, total unbelievable eye-popping violence.
Yeah.
You fucking kidding me? Which one of these guys you want to be? Are you fucking kidding me? That's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two.
Well, Chad, I will admit to a little bit of concern. When I saw Diego Sanchez out here before the Eagle FC fight, talking about how he had been up on the mountain. He had come from the mountains of Albuquerque. Kevin Lee was down here on the beach. And I went, you know what? I was reminded how we had talked before about if Diego Sanchez is one of these fighters who stays too long in the game, takes too much damage, his behavior starts to become strange and erratic and troublesome, how will we know? Because Diego Sanchez has always been a guy who marches to the beat of his own drum.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, uh-oh, maybe this is going to be even worse than I had thought. But then he comes out here, and I'm going to say, acquits himself quite well. Is it just that our expectations are so low? Is it just that maybe our expectations for Kevin Lee were higher than what he is capable of doing right now? Or is Diego Sanchez going to do this till he's 60?
Well, I don't know that any of those questions are mutually exclusive, because obviously Diego Sanchez is going to do this till he's 60. I mean, it's been almost a year since he ditched to Josh Fabia, and he's got a new team. He just had the COVIDs, and it seemed like it was really, really bad, and I think that was a genuine cause for concern, among other genuine causes for concern about Diego Sanchez entering into more fighting in this fight. But to be, you know, honest, he looked pretty good out there, man. Like, he hand speed wise, he's not going to blow anybody away. He's looking slower than ever before. And I guess that's to be expected as he continues to age. But Diego Sanchez is out here throwing body kicks and calf kicks. I know he's got a new team that he's working with, and it seemed like they were able to bring some new wrinkles out of him to make him look a little bit different and arguably better than we've seen him in the last couple years. And maybe that speaks to the lack of direction and coaching that he had been getting most recently from like the people who were around him at the time. I feel like he's surrounded himself with good, solid MMA people now, and he's out here putting on slightly better performances. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to jump up and be the Eagle weight champion of the Eagle FC at 165 pounds, but we didn't get as depressed as we thought we were going to be from watching this thing. And I think that is a good sign for Diego Sanchez. Obviously, like, it seemed like Kevin Lee got injured.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly in this fight, or maybe came into the fight with an injury. I don't know exactly where he sustained it. So I think you got to put a grain of salt on all of that a little bit. But yeah, like, this wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be for Diego Sanchez. And in the sport of mixed martial arts, sometimes you just got to take that as a positive.
Meanwhile, over there, Bellator 276, the Boric business is looking pretty strong. Chad, these guys had themselves a hell of a fight.
Yeah, this was a good one. If you didn't see Adam Boric against Mads Burnell, the main event, was it Bellator 276, I want to say, yep. Something like that.
Yeah.
Go check it out if you can find it, because, you know, unfortunately, because the UFC takes up so much space in the industry, and you also had Eagle FC, and sometimes it feels like Bellator is somewhat tucked away over there on Showtime. You know, I feel like a lot of people aren't watching this, but if you didn't see it, treat yourself to it, man. It's a good MMA fight, and it will remind you that just because these guys are over here in Bellator and not in the UFC doesn't mean that they are lesser in quality. You know, this was a fight that could fit right in on any UFC card. And at this point,
right.
for Adam Boric, a guy who, frankly, the first time we heard of him, we made fun of it because he was going to fight Aaron Pico. And we made the joke, when Bellator calls you to have you fight Aaron Pico, they're not doing it because they want to get in the Adam Boric business. Well, guess what? They're kind of in the Adam Boric business at this point, because he keeps beating people. And this was a fight between two guys who both respectively were tied at the number two ranking in this weight class. Boric wins. He's a little bit injured, he said, coming out of this, a foot injury, I believe, but like, he should be right there for a title shot. And a guy that, if not for a Bellator contract, as I said, you could pluck out of that Bellator cage and drop Adam Boric into the UFC and he could fight most guys.
Right. And, you know, that's what I was thinking about, is that you have here in the Bellator main event, right, where it's like a featherweight fight that you're dealing with, where you go, hey, that you put it anywhere on this UFC fight night card, and it is one of the best fights of the night. They look like exactly like they fit in. You look at the Eagle FC card, even, where it's like, you know, some of the higher weights, maybe we don't have a ton of talent going on there. But then, you know, they had a good bantamweight fight with Ray Borg and Ricky Bandeas, and you go, man, especially at those lighter weight classes, The distinction between UFC level and outside the UFC is kind of non-existent.
Yeah.
That you have so much good talent in that division that lots of people can invest in that division and come up with some good fights and find good talent that's still out there available. I guess the question is that enough? Can you still get fans' attention with that? Or is it just so cemented in people's minds, UFC is up here, everything else is down here?
I mean, it is cemented in everyone's minds, and you're probably not going to bridge that gap anytime soon. You're not going to close that gulf. And even by Bellator standards, an event headlined by Adam Boric and Mads Burnell is somewhat low profile. Like, yeah. If you keep track of Bellator, they are putting together some higher profile stuff. But just in terms of quality of fights, man, like, we haven't seen much better than this one, for either from Bellator or like you know, with a couple of exceptions, maybe this year in the UFC, this was just a terrific fight. These guys are out there going blow for blow most of the way, a terrific pace, a lot of diversity of strikes. And they basically only stopped when Mads Brunell was doing his dance moves, when he was out there, you know, blowing kisses and doing the worm just about. I don't know exactly what you call the dance he was doing, but he did it right in the middle of the fight. And everyone, even Adam Boric, had to stop and be like, what the fuck are you doing, man? So just entertaining all around, I thought, in the main event here from Bellator.
I had a moment this weekend where my youngest daughter asked me, can you do the worm? And I was like, no, I'm not even going to give it a shot. I'm just going to tell you right now, I can't do it. And she was like, I can do the worm. And so naturally I was like, let's see it. She got down on the floor and did something, but it wasn't the worm. And she ended up with a carpet burn on her face. So well, everybody thinks that doing your crazy dances is going to be a lot simpler and easier and cooler, but it takes something to pull it off.
Yeah. I mean, at least she should be doing it at this age when her joints are all still made out of rubber bands and stuff. Did you stop her and you were like, let me tell you about somebody by the name of Johnny Walker?
You know what? The thing was that when she got up from it, she looked at me and the look on her face was like, see, did you see how I just crushed that just now?
Well, yeah, because in her mind, she looked like she just won a breakdancing competition. That's how she was imagining it.
Fucking nailed it. I was like, okay.
What was your reaction? Were you like, oh, that was great?
I think I gave what I would describe as a curt nod.
Okay. Yeah.
My best dad nod, and then I withheld further comment.
That's just a window into your parenting right there. all right. Anything else you want to talk about either of these fights, or we just move on to new business?
Well, I guess I'll wait until we review our bets for the next segment of $20 We Never Want to See Again on Friday's Power Hour for you to gloat about Colin Miranda Maverick via submission.
I did do that. That was a big bet for me. You know, $2 bet got me $10.80. So if you join the Patreon, once again, like I've been saying, not only do you get access to all this fun stuff, but riches. We open the gates to the riches because, if you don't know this already, you and I are a couple of betting sharps.
What I'm hearing is that the only mistake you made was in betting $2 instead of $200.
That's right. Yeah. And maybe thinking Magomed Ankalaev was going to get busy out there. Another mistake that I made, but who knows? All right, that's going to do it for round number two. We'll be right back with round number three. Well, Ben, the UFC is going back to London, England, across the Atlantic Sea for the first time since March of 2019. Last time we were over there, UFC Fight Night, Till versus Masvidal. This weekend, Alexander Volkov against Tom Aspinall is your heavyweight main event. You also got Paddy Pimblett on the card. You got Dan Hooker taking on Arnold Allen. You got Paul Craig against Nikita Krylov. Gunnar Nelson back in the fold. Going to be kicking things off here on the main card. I guess, you know, a number of different ways we could go with this one. The UFC has not been on its international schedule for some time now, owing to the pandemic. Obviously, there's some stuff happening in Europe that makes it perhaps an inopportune time to get back to this stuff, but here we are going to do the damn thing in London. What are you thinking about? What are you looking forward to? What are you worried about for this card?
I mean, perhaps an opportune time to get going back in London with the main event featuring a Russian fighter. That's the tricky part right now, just because, you know, as the world seeks to find ways to communicate that Russia's invasion of Ukraine is unacceptable, a lot of it has hit the sports world for Russian athletes already. And so I saw these comments just this week from Tom Aspinall, who was saying that even he feels like, I don't know 100% if this fight is going to happen as scheduled. He said that he's confident that Alexander Volkov has made it to London. And he even said, I think this was from Submission Radio, where he was saying, please stop sending me screenshots pictures of Alexander Volkov walking around London. I know he's here. That part's, I've got it now. But that everybody has been trying to reassure him the same way, being like, hey, look, he made it into the country, so that part's taken care of. The UFC at least seemed to act like, you know, hey, we don't know what the hell is going to happen, so we're just going to plow ahead as if everything is on schedule. I mean, it's pretty, we're in fight week now, so if it doesn't happen as scheduled, then it'll be a mad scramble. But for the UFC, this is, I believe, the first time we're back to doing a fight night level event, like not a pay-per-view, and doing it somewhere other than either like one of the UFC residencies, whether it was at the Apex or when we were doing like Fight Island stuff in Abu Dhabi. This is the first one that seems like we're getting back to the way things used to be. Yeah. Where, you know, because for a while now they've been doing pay-per-views in front of crowds, in arenas, and moving around different places, you know, especially back and forth to Houston, a whole bunch at the Toyota Center, but also doing, you know, going back to California, back to Florida, stuff like that. But this is the first time we're getting back out on the road for this level of event and going out and back on the international schedule a little bit. And it feels like, you know, You got to feel bad for the UFC a little bit because they go, all right, the pandemic stuff is winding down. We can kind of get back to our usual schedule. And then wouldn't you know it, you get back to your usual schedule and international conflicts form a storm cloud over the main event. And you go, well, shit, you just can't catch a break. Can it ever just be normal?
Yeah.
Just for a little while.
Yeah. Well, we know the UFC certainly has a commitment to keeping its business going, regardless of other circumstances, so you got to believe that they will find a way, if at all possible, to make this fight come off. And I agree with you, like, some of it feels a little bit, reassuring or like a return to normal, but like it's as much as I had qualms and disagreed with the way the UFC handled its business in many instances during the pandemic, it does feel good to see them kind of get back to normalcy here and go on the road again and be in London and have a card with a lot of international products and some people that will appeal to the local fare there. So that's all good. And it seems like in outside of that, you know, just another fight night card with a smattering of people that you recognize. And if you got time to watch it live, maybe you should. And if you got to catch up on it later, that also seems acceptable. So in that way, also feels normal. Feels like we're getting back to something normal here.
Well, I'll say, you know, international tensions aside, a fight between Tom Aspinall and Alexander Volkov is the kind that gets me excited, gets me interested enough to make sure that I'm in my seat, at least come main event time. I am also interested in Arnold Allen and Dan Hooker. And of course, the return of Paddy the Batty, which everybody got very excited about, which he seemed to be one of the most interesting and memorable and most hittable fighters that we've seen come along in quite some time. So I'm interested to see what this outing looks like. Honestly, like those top three at least, and also you got Paul Craig on the fight card going up against Al Capone himself, Nikita Krylov. So you know I'm not going to miss a Paul Craig fight. But those top three especially, that's the part for me where I'm going to be keeping an eye on this fight card and be like, all right, this is when I need to stop what I'm doing, turn on the shit, and watch all the way through.
Yeah, 28-year-old Tom Aspinall, just a baby in the heavyweight division, undefeated in the UFC. He's won 4 in a row there and 7 in a row overall. Last win was against Sergey Spivak in September of last year. That was a TKO. These are all stoppages, by the way. Jake Collier, Alan Boideau, Andre Arlovsky, all stoppages. The only person to take him to the second round was the wily veteran Arlovsky. So this shapes up as an opportunity for him to get arguably the biggest win of his career, or at least add to this win streak against Volkov on home soil over there in England. So a big opportunity for Aspinall. You're right about Paddy Pimblett, again, in the lightweight division where it's hard to make a name for yourself. He seems like a guy who came in the door with some hype and has largely lived up to it in the very, very short term so far. So to see him go out there and fight Rodrigo Vargas in the co-main seems interesting. And also Dan Hooker getting back on the horse is a thing that I'm interested in. What about Gunnar Nelson coming in off back-to-back losses? Have not seen this guy in the UFC Since 2019, he's making his return against Takashi Sato, and that's one I'll watch also, to be honest.
Yeah, man. I did not realize it had been quite so long, but then I also, when I asked myself, when's the last time you thought about Gunnar Nelson? Not that recently.
Yeah.
I gotta admit.
Yeah. So there you go. All right, let's go ahead. We'll do Just Saying Stuff, Ben, and then we will get out of here for this week. What is your Just Saying Stuff?
Which I don't know if you see that Sports Business Journal has a story out with the headline today, UFC Battles Narrative on Fighter Pay. And the battling of the narrative there that we're talking about, it seems, are a talk with the UFC's Lawrence Epstein, UFC COO Lawrence Epstein. I want to point out this part here, though. Hey, this is this story by Adam Stern, and at one point it says, quote, "Critics claim that UFC only shares 16% of its revenue with fighters when determining their split for an event. UFC COO Lawrence Epstein disputed that figure when interviewed this month, but declined to provide specifics." So I guess, just for starters, I'm just saying, if you're not going to tell us what the actual number is, you don't really get to be taken seriously when disputing the number that, by the way, did not come from critics claiming, but came from a bunch of court discovery processes. It came from your own, some of your own communication with potential investors, came from the antitrust case, came from basically the UFC itself and its ownership. And if you're going to tell us all those numbers that basically came from us are not accurate, then you need to tell us what the accurate numbers are, if you want us to actually listen to. I'm just saying. Also, Epstein says that some of this stuff, meaning the criticism, is completely disingenuous. He believes three primary factors had led to the current situation, meaning people being pissed off about the UFC keeping all the money. Jake Paul's focus on the issue, fighters going public with contract negotiations to gain public backing they can leverage in the talks, and broader societal shifts in America where workers are demanding higher salaries. I guess I'm also just saying, you know what you might not want to do is list in this three-pronged explanation of why people suddenly care about your fighter pay issue. If you give Jake Paul credit for it, man, he is going to take that and run with it.
Yeah.
If you're worried that he's just doing it for attention and you're giving him this kind of attention by saying he is like the primary thing focusing on this issue to get people to where Lawrence Epstein has to go talk to Sports Business Journal to try to get him to calm everybody down about it, you're not going to make him stop bringing it up by doing that. I'm just saying.
Yeah, just saying. A lot of time for the UFC to make its case about stuff over in the Sports Business Journal lately, I've noticed.
What are you suggesting?
A lot of real, let's say, even-handed or, complimentary UFC coverage over there in the Sports Business Journal. Very, very strange. You remember Javed Basharat, Ben, the Afghanistan native who fought in the UFC, fought in the Contender Series back in, October of 2021? He fought Israeli fighter Oran Colin, and that was when I believe Colin called him a terrorist, and then Basharat won the fight, and that was when Dana White came out and said, well, fighting is great because the guy who said this racist stuff got beat in the fight, so we don't have to do anything about it because it's the ultimate proving ground or whatever. Well, now this news has come out that Javed Basharat will not be allowed by someone, whether it be a state athletic commission or the UFC, he is not sure, to carry the flag of Afghanistan down to the cage. He says it makes him very sad, and he is not sure why this is the case, but he is not allowed to bring it down there. Also, this is the MMA fighting story by Damon Martin, by the way. This also contains the detail that Brian Kelleher, in his recent fight, wanted to carry the Ukrainian flag out to his fight at UFC 272, was not allowed to do that, then said he wanted to carry a peace flag out to the cage, was not allowed to do that either. So I guess this week I'm just saying I don't understand this. I don't understand what's going on here. We just saw Thiago Santos in the cage with the Brazilian flag over the weekend. We've seen guys bring the Russian flag out in recent times. And carrying the flag out is like the only thing you can do at this point in the UFC. Can't have your sponsor banner. Can't have any third-party sponsors on your shorts. But you can still carry the flag out there, as we see a lot of people do. But Javid Basharat not allowed to bring the flag of Afghanistan out to the cage. And I have no idea why. I guess I'm just saying I don't get this, man. I don't understand what's going on here.
Feels like we could use a little clarification on the flag policy.
It definitely does. It definitely does. Maybe someone will ask some questions, because I would like to get some clarity here. I have no idea what's going on with this. It seems to be a bad look a little bit here. Yeah, I'm just saying.
What about if somebody wanted to come out with that don't tread on me flag? Think they could do that?
What if somebody wanted to have a Juggalo flag? I don't know.
How about one of those flags where Donald Trump's face is superimposed on Rambo?
I mean, at this point, the Gadsden, the don't tread on me flag, it kind of is the Juggalo flag of a certain worldview, right?
Well, now you've given us all a lot to think about.
Just saying. All right, that's going to do it for this week's Co-Main Event Podcast. Thanks to everybody for tuning in to listen. As we have said numerous times, we'll be over at the Patreon page all week this week. Wednesday's live chat, Thursday doing the damn thing, Friday Power Hour. Check us out over there, patreon.com/co-main-event. Or we'll be back in 1 week for another episode of The Proper, telling you about all the stuff that happens at this fight night event in London. Knock on wood, hope it comes off. As for right now, though, we are done. We are through. We are out.
Do you have any big plans? What are your previous plans for the rest of the day?
My plans are to definitely do something creamy with the surefire creamy ending.